welcome to a very special episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, and joining me on the show, the general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. Kwesi, it's great to have you on the show for the very first time. I'm pulling you out of meetings here, so I'm happy that you could make time to jump on. I guess I want to start out by just saying it feels new around there. It feels fresh. It feels like one thing came to an end and another thing started with this draft. Does it feel that way for you?
You know, I think that'll probably settle in when they arrive. I do feel that sense a little bit. But I also want to say that comes with a great appreciation for the people that came before them. You know, I know you're specifically talking about the quarterback, but even just all the guys that have been here these first 2 years, built this culture, had us in the playoffs or competing for the playoffs right up until the last very minute. You know, my admiration and appreciation for those guys will always remain. I always tell those guys my relationships are not transactional. They have my number forever, and really just appreciate those guys. But I am happy about the new guys coming in. These guys are going to pick up the culture for the next, you know, foreseeable future for the Vikings. And I'm excited to add them to the group we added in free agency, the guys that they inherited on this team already. I'm just, you know, we're fortunate to bring in these guys.
It's probably so much different from any other sport when it comes to football, the amount of players that come and go. And, you know, Harrison Smith has talked about that over the years, where it seems like every year in his press conference, we ask him, so you lost this teammate signed somewhere else. And he said, like, that's just kind of how the league works. But I think about when you guys arrived to how different this is now, and especially because Kirk was here for so long, it feels like the Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, Kevin O'Connell team has been formed over the last couple of years. I was mentioning on the show the other day that I think that the hardest part starts now for you guys. Do you view it that way? Like, when you get the quarterback, it sort of starts a new timeline for you. And the hardest one is to really compete and really get to the top of the mountain. So how do you view that?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think, you know, I think I'd always probably say that the hardest thing is the next thing, just because that's how we're wired. But, you know, in a sense, we've added some great names on a depth chart, but now it really involves bringing them in, nurturing them. You know, talk about a quarterback, we talk about environment all the time, and just making sure that we're not the reason that we fail. JJ, I really do believe that when you hire, you know, great executives or quarterbacks, whatever it is, like, it's my job to not fail them. I've identified them as talented. We've identified them as talented. How do we make sure we don't fail him? And so, to your point, the hardest part is that. But looking at it, you know, I have my board with, you know, all our draft picks and cap space going forward. And you are kind of looking forward to the future and trying to think of when will be the optimal window for his performance and our performance, or, you know, as a team. It's a lot. Obviously, it's a puzzle that I don't ultimately know the answer to. All your best laid plans can go out the window if, you know, anything deviates from normal, just like the draft. You know, we got Sam, you know, coming in to compete day one. And, you know, I'm actually really optimistic about Sam and playing well. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, ultimately what you're saying is right. The hard part about planning this in a way that sets up for a timeline to ultimately go climb the mountaintop, that's kind of what we came in and started to do in 2022. And now we're just in year three of that. I won't name it a plan or anything like that, but just we're in year three of it right now.
We're working on it. for new names for the plan. You really handed it on a silver platter to us the first time. But when it came to the J.J. McCarthy decision, I had a lot of fun because there's no pressure on me over the last couple of months, diving into every number I could find, reading everybody's opinion. And the one thing that was difficult for me with J.J. McCarthy was just the lack of numbers to work with. When it came to the other prospects, it was right there. There were hundreds and hundreds of dropbacks, huge sample sizes. And it was just a struggle when you try to even section those things out. How many third down and longs? 100? How many plays under pressure? 50? And I wonder, how did you guys deal with that issue, that the sample size with him specifically, it was very good, but it just wasn't very big?
No, it's absolutely right. And that was probably the struggle that I have, because so much of the analysis I do takes the assumption that on a game basis, guys are going to throw roughly the same amount of plays. I mean, obviously we have advanced metrics that do it on a per attempt basis, but that was a struggle. It really was. And I think you nailed it. I think when you go more to a thinner slice with cutups, and maybe not third and long, third and three plus, you know, red zone, non-drop back, or red zone, no play action, different things like that, where you can kind of make it as apples to apples as possible. And then we also just lean on our statistics that we have that are on a per play basis. Now, the hard part about those is, you know, I always joke, you know, NBA analysis, right? If there's a difference between efficiency and load. If you look at like a number two scorer who sits in the corner and you say, man, this guy's super efficient. Well, that's not the same load that Anthony Edwards has when the whole defense is looking to stop him and he's got to take shots at the end of the shot clock. Those are going to be harder shots. So always trying to make sure that, yeah, we have these metrics, but is it the same thing required of him as is required of other people? And just, and honestly, there is no super smart right answer. There is just a dedicated approach to process information, listening to different viewpoints, and coming up with your evaluation at the end of the day that encompasses all those things.
Which ones mattered to you? Because I thought, I mean, the third down stuff, you could definitely make a case for where it's, hey, it's on you, buddy. I think that under pressure in the NFL can be up and down, but in college, if it's really poor under pressure, I would pay attention to that. He was actually quite good under pressure. And even something that caught my eye too was his play action numbers, where he's turning his back to the defense, which you do not see very often when it comes to college football. And he was really excellent rolling out, throwing on the run. I think that those numbers would probably be the ones I would point to if I was making my case. If I was putting together like my JJ McCarthy dossier, I would say like, these are the ones that kind of stand out to me. Which one stood out to you?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. You know, obviously you start with the overall play as a baseline just to see what that is. But, you know, after that, we focus a lot on third down, red zone. Now within third down and red zone, you're typically going to see those under pressure plays, but under pressure is obviously something we look at. We identify, you know, we have a term we use here where we call it conflict resolution. And then we look at metrics that kind of support that. Now, what's hard about that is conflict resolution isn't necessarily what everybody thinks it is. It's not always just somebody taking off and running. It's, you know, some subtle plays that we talked about, you know, in our time together, just, you know, maybe seeing a lineman about to get edge and taking that subtle two steps over and getting himself a throwing window, things like that. Because ultimately, when you look at a stat, that's only possible for what's available to them. So let's say that they can elude, but there's nobody open and they do a throwaway. Well, that's going to show up as an EPA value of something or whatever it is, well, versus somebody else who just happened to have somebody open. They made the same play, you know, right? And so that's, again, a lot of the stuff we're doing, just like in baseball or basketball, you're trying to contextualize apples to apples to show ability. And if they were in a better circumstance, maybe the stats would have showed something else.
So Kevin O'Connell mentioned something interesting about the way that your thought process has impacted his thought process. I'd love to hear you talk about that, because we all made our culture of collaboration jokes when you guys talked about that getting here. But this was the huge thing going into this decision, is having everybody on board. So how did he take what he can do as far as analyzing film and breaking down the technique of a quarterback and pair that with the quantitative type analysis?
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny, you know, I call the quarterback as a marriage, and obviously me and him, that's a marriage. And so we spend a lot of time together. At some point you start sounding the same, you know, using the same language. But, you know, I think football is this beautiful thing where watching film, and we call it analytics, but it's all the same thing. You know, a statistic is just a play that somebody describes something, yards, EPA, whatever it is. A coach can watch a play and describe it as good or bad. And then how do you contextualize that in the end? And then how do you use that context to make final decisions? So he kind of learned that from me, just my process being a data guy. When I had to learn how to scout, well, I was like, well, I'm a math guy. Well, how does a math guy scout? He takes evidence and he figures out how to use that evidence to make a decision. So just that process of how I set up our scouting culture, where how we talk about quarterbacks in terms of impact, every position really. And then how do you provide evidence that support all those different things? And then, you know, he's a special guy. I say it all the time. I don't think people realize that there's not many coaches in the league that would kind of roll their sleeves up and do the things that I've asked other people to do, that he kind of just sees value in it. And now he's doing. And like, these are things that like your quality control coach might be asked to do. But he wants ownership over it. And he's just such a creative mind and just hardworking that he always wants to grow and learn, develop. And so he's taken that from me. But don't get this twisted for one second. I've learned a ton from him. You know, now I watch quarterback play and I'm talking about base and different things like that, and things that I, you know, obviously I would never know, you know, before. But it's good to have that difference. You know, I'll watch a play. We'll both come together and we'll compare our cutups, and we have the same play, but he's looking at 10 different things that I didn't see. And I'm looking at, well, he sees everything, I'm not going to lie, but there's five things that I probably saw that I focus more on, and maybe I say it a way that kind of hits him certainly. And that's why collaboration is great, because you cover each other's blind spots. You come from a different worldview and you come together, and it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, he's taken to a lot of the stuff I've done from a process standpoint, but I've learned so much from him. It's, you know, it's mutual.
Yeah. I think you spend a few minutes with Kevin and you realize how much you don't know about quarterback play. In comparison, I wanted to ask you, when you got to San Francisco, about your experience there, combining what you could do mathematically with understanding where the football people are coming from, because I did a little stuff when I was reporting with analytics with a hockey team where the coach asked me, "Hey, can you show me some of these numbers you're writing?" And I went into his office thinking, I'm going to tell this guy all the line combinations and I'm going to change this team. And about 5 minutes in, I was like, now I understand why you're doing the things you're doing. And it's a hit you like, oh, okay, I get this at a lot better level. What was that like for you, taking what you could do data wise and then like pairing that early on? Or how did that hit you when you got to San Francisco and started to learn how some of the other stuff works behind the scenes?
No, that's exactly right. You know, I was fortunate enough to come from a trading background where humility is beaten into you on a daily basis, that you don't know everything. 40% of the time when you're good, you lose. And so you're always saying, well, somebody else who's just as smart as me decided to buy when I decided to sell. So I never walk into rooms thinking I've got it all figured out. But when I got to San Francisco, you know, obviously I was tasked with kind of elevating some of their things quantitatively. And I started with scouting reports, you know, just helping them how to quantify what other teams do. But the first thing I did was grab a couple coaches and say, hey, how do you look at other teams? How do you come up with your plan? Always start there. You know, I always call it the what and the why. The what's the numbers, but you got to understand the why to make the what kind of match. So that was always my approach. And then in a scouting sense, you know, Ethan Waugh, who's somebody I always name and mention because he was really impactful to me earlier in my career. He was analytically minded. He's now the assistant GM of the Jaguars, but he's analytically minded. So he would kind of pick my brain about what I was doing, and that would allow me to pick his brain. Now, some of it was for him just not agreeing with some of what my models came up with. Hey, here's why this guy's good. And me seeing that and being like, okay, well, let me see if I can try and incorporate this context that I'm missing. You know, I'd be in meetings with Kyle in a team meeting, and just seeing how he talked about the game made my modeling better. Cause you know, I'm you know, at some point there's only so much football I know, but now I hear it from him and him talking about a wide zone play and why this matters versus this. I'm like, well, wow, could I quantify that? And then now I'm off for the next 3 months trying to quantify this really small thing to make our models marginally better, which would make our outcomes marginally better. So that was kind of my process there. You know, at the time you're going through it, it's tough because, you know, you're coming up with a perspective that other people don't have. And there sometimes is that, you know, I don't want to say adversarial, but just, you know, not able to communicate what I mean. And I got so much better after the fact. And I have such great relationships with all those guys now. We talk about that those old days and how much we all learn from each other, really. You know, I wouldn't be here without all those people and all those interactions.
So what was the biggest adjustment when you got the job here as general manager? Again, I think people think that you just make all the decisions and you have your laptop in there and you go trade. But I don't think it works that way quite. But over the, like, how far have you come over the last couple of years?
That's exactly right. You know, I think, you know, these are buildings, these are organizations. There's a lot of people whose livelihoods are at stake with, you know, with whatever happens when I hit that button. And you got to build consensus, you know, but consensus is hard because not everybody's going to agree. Football's a sport where it's complex and there's a lot of different ideas that people can have, and they're right. But we got to make one decision, and you got to, you know, I've tried to take this definition of consensus to mean you don't all have to agree, but we all have to live with it and support it. How do we get us to a place where we can all live with it and support it and understand the why behind, hey, and validating people who want to go left, even when I want to go right. And from my standpoint, I'm just wired to be open-minded. I just, you know, just from my experiences in life, when somebody smart challenges an opinion I have, I go do more work. I go take what they've said and I have a process for figuring that out. And sometimes you come out and say, look, I see what you see. Here's why I think the answer is going to be different. But you know, I just think it's irresponsible of the leader to hire talented people and then not take their opinion to mean something. So I'd say that's probably the biggest area of growth, being open-minded, but at some point you got to just, you know, decide and make a decision and just know that you're going to be the most accountable person in the room. And, you know, good or bad, left or right, up or down, you live with that. That's definitely been a growth area for me.
I think just overall being the guy who's managing lots of people versus a contributor to management is a very different situation. One more thing for you. So you're a big Wolves fan now and watching the NBA a lot. You and I debated over Anthony Edwards' comp. Personally, for me, it's Vince Carter. You think he'd be better. Everybody's saying it's Michael Jordan. That's a little much for me. It's a little much for me, considering when I grew up watching Michael Jordan. But when you look over at them, at the Wolves and where they are now, that's where you want this team to be. You want people to be talking about your best players as Michael Jordan and competing for a championship. Is there anything you take from them and take from how they do things, how they have built that roster to be in this position where they are now?
100%. You know, I talk to Tim often, become a good friend, really great guy. But I will go back to the Anthony Edwards thing. I grew up the same era as you did. There's a couple times he makes a couple moves where I'm just like, I know what that looks like, man. And like, you don't want to say it because we revere the goats for a good reason. But man, there's a couple times where you're just like, I know what that looks like. That feels really familiar. And he's got the dog mindset. I know people questioned it coming out, but I don't know. I watch a player who is trying to put a team on his back and go win a championship. I take a lot from their team building. They have a lot of core pieces, obviously that one main piece, but they also took some risk with the Rudy Gobert trade, which people, you know, there's always going to be things that you do that are kind of within the lines. But every organization, I believe, to get to that top of the mountaintop is going to take something that's going to take some bet, some risk, something that's outside the lines that people are going to be a little nervous about. But that's what a sport designed for everybody to go 500. You kind of got to do something to swing outside. And look, when you take that swing, that also can give you some odds of going back the other way. But like, sitting in the middle probably isn't necessarily always the right thing to do. So taking that, their approach has been just awesome. Just awesome to watch from afar.
Well, I guess that's Dallas Turner versus draft charts, what you might be describing there. But after taking a look at Dallas Turner, I think that might work out. So, but anyway, we could talk analytics for hours for sure. But I just thank you for coming on. Really appreciate all of your time. And look, it's okay if you want to label the next thing. You know, it's all right if you want to give us something to work with. Competitive rebuild. I'll tell you this. It was actually really helpful. You may have hated how many times we said it, but we understood the plan much better and could see it play out. So give yourself a little credit for that. Your time, your open and honesty at the podium sometimes.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. And I always enjoy the questions you ask me. Really thoughtful. It's always sometimes nice to get I get a little nerd crutch up there because I know you're going to get me something that I can, you know, talk through. And so really always appreciate you up there, man.
Absolutely. Kwesi Daffo-Mensah, thanks so much for coming on.
Our boss.
Folks, we all have smartphones and we know that they are pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we can find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. That's uscellular.com/builtforus.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I set up tonight's live stream with the plans to have Manny Hill join me. And I actually set up the topic for Manny Hill, who is downright a Minnesota Vikings historian. And just as we were about to go on, his internet went down and there's storms kind of coming through and he lost his power for a minute. And so he's trying. Usually we get into the show before Manny freezes, but this time he froze before the show. So Manny's going to try to get his internet back up and going, and we'll join if he is able to. As always, we'll go and chat for a little while here, as we usually do, and we'll have some fun. So I'll read the headline of this episode, and we can get all of your guys' reaction, and we could talk and chat a little bit more about the draft, what's coming up next for the Vikings, and maybe a little bit. I wrote out the depth chart. I want to go through that a little bit about what they could still do and maybe what they still need to do. But let's just start out with which quarterback in history is most like JJ McCarthy. Which quarterback could he most be like? Which quarterback is the bar for JJ McCarthy to be a success, and which is the most likely? That's what was on my mind for Manny, who loves to talk about this so much. And Manny will appear at some point, whether it's tonight or later on. But just in terms of this question, though, let's dive into that first. And then if Manny has a chance to jump on, then that will be great. And if not, again, we'll connect with him another night. As you guys know, Manny, always welcome on the show. The first guy that came to mind of who JJ McCarthy could be like for me was somebody that he doesn't remind you of when it comes to velocity of him running, but could actually have a lot of the elements of this quarterback. And I wonder if you guys can guess who I'm talking about. When we discuss McCarthy, and he is a pretty good athlete, but he's most known for the intangibles, how well he understands the game, the leadership element. There's a little bit of playmaker in the guy, but what you're talking about most is somebody who can be the face of your franchise, that's going to put the ball to the right place, maybe isn't perfect as a thrower, maybe isn't perfect as a playmaker and all those things, but he can do all the right things that you ask him to do. Now, immediately a couple of you are saying Fran Tarkenton. Please do not say Fran Tarkenton. That's like comparing someone to Mahomes. Fran Tarkenton, when he retired, was considered one of the 3 to 5 best quarterbacks to ever pick up a football. So we just can't do that. We just can't do that. He went to 4 Super Bowls. He's just an unbelievable. Wait, was it 4? 3? 3 Super Bowls. Unbelievable player. All-time great quarterback. We cannot compare the guy they just drafted to one of the true greatest quarterbacks in the history of American football. Okay, we can't do that. So it's got to be anybody else. Throw out Fran Tarkenton. Anybody else. Who is he similar to? I am going with somebody who is a little bit taller and not as fast, but that would be Brad Johnson. And here's why. The lack of unbelievable tools, and I know that he has good tools, good arm, and he can run and so forth. Yes, Brady. That's the other one that we should always stay away from. He went to Michigan, like Brady. But Brad Johnson is who I'm thinking of. That he was able to execute the offense. He could get the ball to his playmakers' hands. He won a heck of a lot of games as the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings and was somebody that you really wanted leading your football team. He went to Washington and he won. He went to Tampa Bay and he played with a great team and he won a Super Bowl there and he played really good football for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when he had great wide receivers, great running game, and was able to win a Super Bowl with a great defense. As a member of the Vikings, he was consistently successful, though not flawless, not perfect. It wasn't like Brad Johnson was throwing 50-yard bombs all over the place. And I don't expect JJ McCarthy to do that either, but there was a lot of value in Brad Johnson being able to get under center, throw the ball to the right places. It also took a little while for Brad Johnson to develop. Now, he was not a first-round pick, of course. He was much later. It might have even been 9th round because he had been a basketball player. But you could see, even despite Brad Johnson's size, you could see where those little athletic elements would come in. And it's more than just the how fast you run or how hard you could throw the ball is not just athleticism. It's catching your own pass and running it for a touchdown, the way he could move around, the fluidity with which he threw the football. All those things went into Brad Johnson's athleticism. And there are parts of that that remind me of McCarthy, where Brad Johnson throwing the football was not always flawless. It didn't have the Warren Moon type of spin. It didn't have the Jeff George type of whip it and launch it down the field. But he was always that guy as the captain, the guy who's leading the ship. And they were able to do a lot with him as their quarterback. The other part of it, too, is that J.J. McCarthy did not put up the hugest statistics in college. I don't think Brad Johnson ever put up massive statistics when he was in college. And I don't know that he will in the NFL either. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is going to be the type of quarterback that's going to put up, 40 or 50 touchdowns a year in the NFL. All right. Looks like we've got him. Oh, look who it is. It's Manny Hill. Manny, the internet is back. I was joking before you got here that the internet usually freezes on you once. It just happened to freeze on you before, as opposed to making your head freeze. So let me say hello. What's going on? How are you? It's been a little while.
Yeah, it usually freezes on me about 8 minutes into the 8 o'clock hour. This time it was like 10 minutes before the 8 o'clock hour. Like literally everything in my apartment shut off. Like everything, it just went to black. Internet, routers, all that stuff just went kaput. And so that was a struggle. The power came back after about a minute or so. And then the internet and my router and stuff needed to reboot. And so it was a big cluster, but here I am.
Here you are. I'm back. It's great to see you. And I can't wait to get all of your opinions on what the Vikings did in the draft. And I was telling everybody that I curated this topic just for you. So I was trying to work my way through it by myself, but I felt really alone here out on an island. I'm like, I need Manny for the historical comps here to J.J. McCarthy. But I want you to take a guess, if you didn't overhear while you were waiting for me to pop you in, who I was comparing J.J. McCarthy to. The first guy, and I haven't worked my way through this, we've got some time to talk through on the show. The first one that popped into my mind for a quarterback that I think J.J. McCarthy could end up being like in Vikings history, and of course, people already said Fran Tarkenton, and that was not something that he could be. So,
I'm probably wrong on this. Well, okay, I'll do this. I'll give my comp. I actually, when the Vikings drafted J.J. McCarthy the other night, the first person that actually came to my mind was Teddy Bridgewater with a stronger arm. That's kind of what I thought about, is, a guy who's really highly regarded by his teammates, known as a great leader, can step into a situation and be productive if you need him to be. And Teddy didn't have a bad arm, but he didn't exactly have a rocket. J.J. McCarthy's got a really strong arm. That's one of his physical traits that he's got going for him. So I kind of thought of like a stronger arm Teddy Bridgewater is what, I kind of envision him to be going forward.
I like that. And I definitely see that. The way that he immediately can communicate with his teammates, and that's what everybody talks about, is just how well he dials into his teammates. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah talked about that. Kwesi used sort of a modern term of emotional intelligence. That's a hard one to, I think, for people to connect on. All that means is that he's just good at connecting with people, that he understands people, he can read people, and that he can, get into somebody's ear if they need that, or he can pat somebody on the back if they need that. He understands his teammates and what they need from him. That is a very good trait to have as a quarterback. Teddy had that in spades. I did an article a few years ago about how each player had been impacted by Teddy Bridgewater in their career. So Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, Xavier Rhodes, a bunch of different guys from the 2017 team told individual stories just about how he made them a better player as he went along. And that you could see from someone like J.J. McCarthy as he grows into this role. The other part was the maturity element from the person. McCarthy looks extremely young to me after looking at, Sean Mannion, who was 29 going on 47, and Kirk Cousins, and, You know, Josh Dobbs is a grown-up. Nick Mullins is a grown-up. Even Jaren Hall is 25. This is the youngest quarterback that I've been at a press conference with and looked very young, but did not act very young. And that was impressive. I thought the same way with Teddy Bridgewater, where he was one of the younger quarterbacks in the draft that year, but he did never acted like that. He never acted like he was immature. However, I did not go with him. I went with a faster, slightly smaller Brad Johnson. That's what I went with, because my thought was, I don't view J.J. McCarthy as throwing the prettiest football. It's not like it comes out like C.J. Stroud or something. And he is a good athlete, and which I think Brad was in his own gigantic way of moving around in his earlier years. But getting the ball to the right place at the right time and being a leader and having some grit to his game, and maybe you don't look at the stats and go, oh my gosh, wow, those are the most incredible stats I've ever seen. But Brad Johnson was good at continuing the offense to move, not making a whole heck of a lot of mistakes. And then when he was with the right team, it showed. When he had great receivers, when he had a great defense, he was able to take a team and win the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. And if that's what J.J. McCarthy becomes, which is the other part of the conversation, then I think that that is a really good outcome for the Vikings and one you can win with. I'm not saying that McCarthy doesn't throw it fast, but I'm saying he doesn't throw the prettiest football. That's different. That right. He does throw, you know, sprays it a little bit, and it isn't always like flawlessly accurate. I don't think that anyone said that that was really his thing at this moment. He's going to have to improve that. And sometimes it was that way with Brad, where he's, you know, that ball comes out, it's not perfect, but he got it to the right place enough, operated the offense, led the team, and there you have it. Like, that's a quarterback that you can win with. That was my comparison.
I like it. Brad Johnson was a tough SOB, man. That guy was gritty, and like you said, he was a great leader. Won a lot of games in his times with the Vikings when he was starting quarterback. They went to the playoffs multiple times with him. He was good, man. And obviously, like you said, you get him in the right situation where he's got good wide receivers to throw to, a good offensive line, a solid running game, and a really good shutdown defense. He's going to thrive. And, you know, it feels like with J.J. McCarthy, it's going to be the same type of thing. If Vikings can continue to rebuild this defense, he's got the weapons, the targets to throw to, an offensive line is that's really, really solid. Still need to find a left guard. Still need to find that part of it. But you got four of the five spots on the offensive line that are in pretty good shape, especially with the two tackles. So, and you've got, you know, I think what should be a productive run game, if Kevin O'Connell really, you know, designs a run scheme that's going to be conducive to what Aaron Jones and Ty Chandler can do to allow them to be productive. And, you know, JJ is going to be in a really good situation that's going to allow him to really thrive. And obviously there's things that he's going to have to work on. He's 21 years, like, and when you say he's 21 years old, this kid just turned 21 in January. Like, he's been of legal age to drink for 3 months, going on 4 months now. So he's very, very young. And I also hope too that Vikings fans will be very patient with him because he is young. He does have a lot of maturity, which is, you know, there's a lot to like there. The physical tools, there's a lot to like there as well. But it's so rare for a guy that young to step in and just be all world right away out of the gate. So I just hope people are patient with him when he does, you know, finally see the field, whenever that's going to be.
Some very serious ups and downs in the comment section with attempting to compare J.J. McCarthy to historical quarterbacks. Play style wise, he is not like Fran Tarkenton. Fran Tarkenton would drop back and scramble and make crazy plays down the field. That's not what McCarthy did in college at all. He was a play within the system guy that when things broke down, he was capable of scrambling and making a play, but he is not like that's Caleb Williams. The way that Caleb Williams plays is exactly what Fran Tarkenton did, where the play broke down. It was run around, dodge tacklers, and then make a play down the field. And at the time, he would have been like the original Mahomes at the time that Fran Tarkenton was doing it. But no, that's not really how he plays. I mean, is he athletic and mobile enough to be Randall Cunningham? Like, no, never, not even close. Randall Cunningham is one of the great athletes in NFL history. So no, that's more like Jaden Daniels, probably. Let's see. He is very much not Case Keenum. Nope, nowhere close. Case Keenum had no arm whatsoever and really was not very accurate at all, and played at Houston until he was like 20 something years old and threw for a million yards when he was at Houston. There's almost no one farther away from Case Keenum than JJ McCarthy, who is 6'3", by the way. And Case Keenum, I think maybe was 6'1". I don't know what he's listed at, but he was not particularly big. What's the difference between Mac Jones and JJ McCarthy outside of almost everything? I'm not sure. Number one is that Mac Jones had one good year in college. McCarthy actually started more than Mac Jones. He was much worse in terms of arm, much worse in terms of athleticism. When he came out, the whole thing was this guy's never going to make a play outside of structure, but that's what JJ McCarthy does all the time.
Yeah. So, Mac Jones is not a runner at all. JJ McCarthy's not a great athlete, but he can run at times and pick up some first downs on occasion. There's a little bit more mobility, I think, with JJ McCarthy than Mac Jones, almost by default.
Now we've got Rich Gannon, which I think I don't hate that. Somebody who is raw and a very good athlete coming out. I think the story was that New England wanted to make Rich Gannon into a running back, and that's why he ended up as a quarterback for the Vikings. That doesn't sound similar to the 10th overall draft pick, but I could see it as far as the guy hasn't played a ton of football at quarterback, and he is going to have to work through that as he starts his career, just that lack of actual experience. And plus, Gannon was a great athlete. So is McCarthy. Gannon was not the most accurate, though, with the football, which may be an issue for McCarthy as he starts his career.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, Rich Gannon winning the MVP in 2002, if JJ McCarthy gets to that level, that's good, because Rich Gannon was very good in 2002. I think if you're a Vikings fan, you just have to hope it doesn't take like 15 years, because Rich Gannon really emerged. You know, he was like 37, 38 years old when he was at his best in that MVP season. I would hope that if JJ McCarthy is going to be good, it doesn't take till he's about 37 or 38 before we see him at his peak. But I think if he can get to that level that Gannon was in 2002, that would be ideal.
Well, and Gannon had a great team where he became a distributor, but he also got to be very, very accurate over the years. And we saw Gannon improve that even as a Viking, it got better. But then when he went to Kansas City, it got better, and it just continued to grow throughout his career, which of course, if you're the Vikings, you hope happens faster than Rich Gannon. But again, we're talking about a top 10 draft pick here, so it's a little bit different. Terry Bradshaw brought up, and so Bradley says that I'm not old enough to have watched Terry Bradshaw. And well, that is true. Number one, we have this thing called YouTube and NFL films where I have seen Terry Bradshaw throw the ball. Also, fun fact, my college sports writing professor covered Terry Bradshaw and talked about him a lot in class. And I can definitely tell you there is nothing similar between JJ McCarthy and Terry Bradshaw. Terry Bradshaw had one of the biggest cannons of all time. Just an absolute rock. I mean, imagine where he would throw the ball to if this was now. Well, they have like good footballs to throw as opposed to these just potatoes that they were throwing back in the day. I can't even imagine. It did take Terry Bradshaw.
Deep ball, man. A beautiful deep ball, Terry Bradshaw.
I mean, the NFL films deep ball of, you know, but it did take him a while to develop. There was that. I mean, I don't see any other similarity, but it was that he took a while. I don't see any similarity really with Wade Wilson. Wade Wilson was just a mad bomber too. How many Vikings quarterbacks, by the way, just like launch the ball down the field all the time? That was like what they did. That's Wade Wilson.
Yeah, Wade Wilson, Jeff George was like that too. You just had a rocket and could just like throw it off his back foot 65 yards down the field. You know, Randall Cunningham had a really strong arm that could throw it deep a lot. That's why him and Moss were such a great combination that year. Yeah, I mean, Dante had a great just rocket arm and could launch it, you know, 70 yards if he needed to. That's kind of the history. And JJ's got a strong arm, but like you said, he just puts so much zip on it. He's like Roger Clemens trying to throw a fastball over the plate, you know, with every throw that he makes. So that's going to be something that he's going to need to kind of develop and, you know, learn, put a little bit more touch on the ball. And I think Kevin O'Connell will work on that and, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I see somebody said Sean Salisbury as a comparison. Let's hope not.
Yeah, you better hope not. No offense, Sean Salisbury. He is one of our media people now. I think he does a sports radio show in Houston. But I think even Sean Salisbury would say that you're hoping for a little bit better than that. Non-Minnesota QB comp is Troy Aikman. Let's not go that far. Troy Aikman, again, was like an iconic quarterback prospect coming out. One of the great prospects at UCLA to ever be drafted into the NFL. But also a guy who sat, took a little while to develop, and then needed greatness around him to produce multiple Super Bowls. Don't make me do the Troy Aikman rant, because I will when people downplay Troy Aikman. I will, but I don't think that's quite it. The thing about Troy Aikman is the difference with McCarthy and all these quarterbacks is that I don't think he throws a beautiful football. Not yet. He's going to have to continue to learn to be able to do this. Troy Aikman had one of the most majestically accurate, you know, just perfect. You teach this to every little kid how to throw the football just like him.
just watch Super Bowl 27. If people want to know how good Troy Aikman was, just watch him absolutely dissect the Buffalo Bills defense in Super Bowl 27. It was magical. I'm sorry to bring that up, Collar.
It was
just a magical performance. He was outstanding in that game.
So I like this one. This isn't a Vikings one, but young Jim Harbaugh is not bad. It actually is not bad. It's too obvious a little because Michigan and Michigan, but it's not bad because Harbaugh was not perfect throwing the football. Really good athlete. When he retired, he was one of the tops in rushing yards for quarterbacks, and he knew how to lead a team. And that was his biggest thing. And that might be the same for McCarthy. I think I agree that he with Timothy, that he's more talented than Brad Johnson. I wouldn't call him a better decision maker. We don't know that yet. We're just dealing with he's supposed to be good at decision making, but that was Brad Johnson's thing, is being able to throw it to the right place, the right time, his timing, his leadership of the offense. But the pure arm strength was better, but I also think accuracy for him was pretty good. So, I mean, I don't think there's any perfect comparison. He doesn't really remind me of Tommy Kramer, Norm Snead. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. If we're going outside of him, I don't think I've mentioned this to you. My comparison for going back a little ways was Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Matt Hasselbeck. I like that comp. I like that comp a lot. You know, Hasselbeck wasn't like a great athlete, but he could run around if you needed him to, if he needed to pick up a first down. He had the ability to, you know, get outside the pocket and run for a first down if he absolutely had to. You know, not a perfect arm, but an arm that was good and was accurate. He knew where to throw the football. He knew exactly where to put it. And, you know, Hasselbeck was another one of those guys that it took him a little bit. You know, he was a backup in Green Bay. And then went to Seattle and took him a couple of years with Holmgren to really kind of get it together. But when he did, when he was at his best, when they went to the Super Bowl and played the Steelers, you know, Hasselbeck was at his best. And he had a really good team around him, had a good offensive line, had one of the best running backs in the league, had MVP in Sean Alexander. Defense was pretty good. Everything just kind of came together for him that year, and it allowed him to kind of be at his best. And that's kind of, I think, with J.J. McCarthy, if we're thinking about like how good he's going to be, I think it's the Matt Hasselbeck type where he's probably never going to be in the conversation for being like the best quarterback in the league, but you put a good enough team around him, he can be very productive, and you're going to have a chance. You're going to have a chance to compete and win.
I'm laughing at the trolling in the comments. Spurgeon win, of course, is the funniest answer. John Elway might be the second funniest answer. What about Bob says McCarthy is Happy Gilmore with a rocket arm instead of a hard slap shot. one of those touch passes. You just got to tap it in from Happy Gilmore. That's right. That is right, though. Everything is a slap shot from him. Dak Prescott with a slightly better arm. I mean, I think Dak Prescott is a pretty good arm, but is very accurate, but I like that one too. I like that one too. Lucas says he meant Randall Cunningham 37, but Randall had a cannon. That's the problem. Like throwing the thing with JJ McCarthy is that at this moment, he was not very good at throwing the ball deep. He was good at whipping it super hard into traffic. And I think that number at the combine, to show you how not great that number at the combine can be, about how like the miles per hour isn't exactly like deep ball, doesn't correlate to deep ball, is Kirk Cousins had one of the highest velocities throwing at the combine because you get to crow hop into the thing. Like you get to give everything you have. It's not like stepping back and throwing a nice, pretty arc on a deep ball, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think with Randall Cunningham, he just had a magical set of skills that had they been better worked with early in his career, that he would have been even better, and he was like borderline Hall of Fame. Jake Plummer, I like Jake Plummer for this.
I like Jake Plummer. That's a pretty good one. And Jake was kind of the same mold, about the same size, about a 6'2", 6'3", type of guy. Could run around, again, not like a great super athlete, you know, not a Lamar Jackson level running athlete, but he could run and move around and extend plays if you needed him to. Arm was pretty good. He was another one of those guys where if you put a good team around him, he can have success, like that Denver team in the mid 2000s where he was pretty good. Same. Yeah. I like Jake Plummer. That's a pretty good one.
So what's his peak is a question from Dwayne. No, Dwayne, his peak is not Brady. No one's peak is Brady. We just need to toss out the all-time greats. We talk about just like anybody. This was my thing with Drake May over draft season, where it would be like, well, you know, Drake May could be like Josh Allen. Stop. Pull it back. Yes, I suppose he could. But the same thing with, like, yeah, I suppose it's possible that J.J. McCarthy could win 10 Super Bowls, but I don't think that he will. So why don't we be realistic about that, that peak? Now, Giuseppe says, hopefully better than Hasselbeck. I think you're not remembering Hasselbeck that well, because if you go back to early 2000s, he led a ton of winning for the Seattle Seahawks. And of course he wasn't doing it by himself, but he was a great play action quarterback, enough of a playmaker, guessing a better athlete than you guys remember. He was known for his playmaking. So I think that if he becomes Matt Hasselbeck and in his rookie contract, you have a chance to win a lot of games. Like, that's a good outcome, I think.
Yeah. If he's 2005 Matt Hasselbeck when the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl, sign me up. I'll take that. Matt Hasselbeck 2005 was excellent. He was very, very good. And that was a really, really, really good Seattle team that got to the Super Bowl and ran into, you know, a Steelers team that had a lot of momentum and a really great defense, and Antoine Randall-El throwing to Hines Ward in the Super Bowl. That's kind of what they ran into, and some questionable calls by the officials as well. Some of that too. Yeah.
The referees, hello, JJ was a 5-star recruit. Excellent athlete. Oh, I know. Randall Cunningham is like the greatest athlete of all time. So when we're talking about it changes, a 5-star college recruit athlete is here. Greatest NFL athletes are up here. they are on a different plane. They are the Lamar Jackson, the Mike Vick. I mean, we're talking about the 1% of 1% human beings to ever step on the planet Earth. That is not JJ McCarthy. He's a good enough athlete to make plays. That is the point. And that's one of the reasons that I liked him in the draft. Like, as far as when we put down, what are the reasons you would be skeptical or concerned? One of the reasons that you like, always in the like category, is, hey, if it's fourth and eight, let's just say Dexter Lawrence breaks through the line of scrimmage. Let's just say, totally random situation I'm throwing out here. Then the quarterback, rather than checking down to TJ Hockenson, let's just say, could scramble and run away and create a play. And that's something that JJ McCarthy could do. But, and that's why I like the, you know, the Jake Plummer thing makes a lot of sense, because he was a really good athlete and he could make plays, but he was not some insane athlete where he was scrambling and running all over the place. And I think that, you know, that's what JJ McCarthy is going to be able to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you hope for, especially, you know, with like the Jake Plummer comparison, I think what you hope for is that, that if that's what JJ McCarthy becomes, cool. You just hope that, like, maybe he can sustain it for a longer period of time, you know, maybe through a second contract into, you know, into his late 20s and early 30s, maybe. I mean, Plummer, you know, Arizona Jake Plummer was a little more turnover prone, I think, before he got to Denver and got with a really good team and a good running game with Mike Shanahan's, you know, zone blocking scheme. But I think if you can get that sort of that 2005 Jake Plummer out of JJ McCarthy and kind of sustain that for like a 5-6 year period, you're going to have a chance to win, I think, a lot of games during that time.
And you're right, Aya. I did compare him to Brad Johnson. I did say faster Brad Johnson. That was the thing. And Brad, I do want to give Brad his credit. He was a great basketball player in college. Mm-hmm. So it's not that he wasn't a good athlete, and you saw him juke out a dude and run for a touchdown. But the running element will be something that is different. Alex Smith is an interesting comparison. That the reason that I haven't loved the Alex Smith comparison is a detail, and this is getting in the woods a little bit, because Alex Smith won a ton of games and was a really good quarterback. But when Alex Smith had to try to throw on the run, it looked like Jared Goff. You know how Jared Goff starts to run, then just throws the ball right into the ground? Alex Smith did the same thing. Yep. He was either put his head down and run or drop back straight and pass, where I think McCarthy keeps his eyes downfield and can make plays. And I understand. I know Brad Johnson was bigger. I get it. Like, I know that this is not an exact comparison. I'm talking about kind of a playing style of, like, he's not going to put up these wild stats. He's going to be a great leader for them. He's going to get the ball to the right places, and he's going to make things happen through leading the offense more so than having crazy Lamar Jackson or whatever type of skills. But you know, Alex Smith is pretty fair, except for I think that there is a much more playmaking element to him than Alex Smith ever had.
Yeah. I think in terms of like throwing on the run, I think JJ McCarthy can actually be like one of his strengths. That's something that he can do. Now, are those throws always going to be accurate? I mean, we don't know that yet, but he does have the ability to, you know, throw the ball and put some good velocity and some good zip on it, you know, as he's kind of throwing off balance or throwing on the run. A lot of quarterbacks can't do that. So if he has the ability to do that, which it kind of seems like he does, that's going to be a plus. That's going to be something that I think works in his favor.
I did indeed dismiss the Case Keenum thing just because we're talking about so much more vastly talented than Case Keenum. I mean, we're talking about taller, stronger arm, much faster, like all those things. Alex Smith is actually a really great athlete. I think you're missing that one. So there's so much difference between them. Like 2017 Case Keenum, yeah, I mean, the locker room factor, you could say that, the locker room factor. If we were picking which specific things about him, maybe you have the leadership element of Case Keenum, but there's not really the chip on the shoulder like Case Keenum had, which I think really made him a galvanizing player what was he, seventh round or undrafted or whatever it was for Case Keenum. And he had this kind of nobody believes in me type of thing. That's not McCarthy. He's just been a front runner. His first high school, he won a championship. His second high school, he won a championship. He goes to college and wins a championship. He's just been with the best of the best. He wasn't really this underdog. I guess people don't remember Brad Johnson to understand why this makes sense as a Brad Johnson type quarterback. But I guess you're just going to have to go back and watch some early Vikings games. Don't watch the one where Brad is 38. Watch Brad in his earlier days and the way that he plays. Yeah. And also, right, Keenum threw for a gazillion yards in college and played forever. I think he played 5 years in college. So yeah, like pretty much, you know, different on a lot of different levels. Case, that's why. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Case had a couple of I think he had like a couple of ACLs while he was at Houston and had some like medical red shirts, which kind of allowed him to play for an extended period of time there. And he was like starting, I think, as a freshman when he was at Houston. So like he played a lot of games, racked up a lot of yards, set a lot of NCAA records. I don't know how many of those have been broken since, but like Case played a long time in college, and he wasn't, you know, Case wasn't very big either. Like he's not, you know, JJ McCarthy is a good 6'3" and, you know, I think he's put on a little bit of weight since college. So he's probably up to about 215, 220 pounds, maybe. I mean, Case was like 6 feet and like 200 pounds, 205, something like that. It's really not the same thing at all.
But I understand where they're coming from as far as a players like, you know, like that guy and want to, you know, sort of be around presence. Him, the leadership. Yeah. The presence is a great word for it. Yeah.
Yep.
So, anyway, it's so interesting to just get different people's viewpoints on what this quarterback could be. What's the bar though? Who does he have to be as good or better than in his Vikings career for you to say it was a hit, Manny? And this is a weird one because there's so many one great season quarterbacks, but that also presents a question. Like if he was to have only one great year as a Viking, but it was like Case Keenum's year where he played extremely well and went to the NFC Championship or something and then never did anything again, would that be a success? That's almost what Baker Mayfield did with Cleveland, except for they didn't quite get there. But then there's other quarterbacks who lasted longer but did not have a lot of success. And then there's a guy who just left, which would be an interesting comparison to ask if that would be a success. That's where I want you to start. I want you to start with if he has Kirk's time here, if he plays here through his rookie contract or 6 years and plays exactly like Kirk Cousins, was that a successful draft pick?
Well, I think it's gonna, I think it would depend on how much winning they do. I think that's really what it's going to come down to. Because if he's, you know, if he puts up the same type of numbers that Kirk put up, but if the Vikings are, you know, a middling 500 team that makes the playoffs like twice and, you know, they don't really go very far either in either trip to the playoffs, it's hard for me to view that as a success if you drafted a quarterback 10th overall. Like that, like you gotta have more than that. I mean, the Buffalo Bills, what they've gotten out of Josh Allen, you know, they've been to the playoffs every year since 2019. He's an MVP candidate every year. They go, you know, they're like legit Super Bowl contenders, you know, for a number of years. The Vikings never have gotten that with Kirk Cousins in 6 years. He was productive and the numbers were there, but it wasn't really a lot of winning at a high level. So I think that if to view JJ McCarthy as a success, the Vikings are going to have to really put themselves in a position to contend for a Super Bowl. Doesn't necessarily mean they have to like get to the Super Bowl and win it, but you know, if they can find themselves in an NFC title game or two in the next 6 years, then I would say, yeah, that's a pretty successful run.
It's a really difficult question to answer because if someone put up those types of numbers that you drafted with a first round pick, and I'll give you an example of a guy who's exactly like this in a second, mm-hmm. then it's really hard to say, wow, you totally blew it. if you didn't win, I think we would point fingers at other people, which of course a lot of people wanted to do with Kirk Cousins during his entire time here. But the fact that it's an inexpensive version will mean someone screwed up elsewhere pretty badly, whether it was the draft, free agency, coaching, whatever it might have been, or bad luck, which tends to befall the Vikings occasionally throughout their history. But something will have to have gone wrong if you are that cheap and you put up those types of numbers. That was always the issue with Cousins, that it came back to, well, he's so expensive that he's got to play better than what he's doing. The bar is very, very high because you can't build a top-notch roster. That actually sounds like Justin Herbert. If he becomes Justin Herbert through his rookie contract, I think we're saying as a pick, it was a success. As a franchise, it was a failure, which actually kind of works for Kirk, by the way. As an individual signing, he played better football than he played in Washington, which means it was a good signing for the way that he played. He gave you more than even what you would have expected. As a franchise, it was a failure because you didn't win anything. We're probably going to have to separate those two things. But I also have to say, if he plays like Kirk, they should win more because the team should be better around him.
Yeah, because you're going to have the flexibility of the rookie rookie quarterback contract. You're going to have a ton of cap space in 2025 for Kwesi to go out and cook and sign, you know, fill holes that you need on defense and, you know, whatever holes you might have on offense at that point, and really build a contending team. That's going to be kind of the advantage that they have that the Vikings didn't really have for 6 years with Kirk Cousins, because his contract was taking up so much of the cap that they had to kind of nickel and dime their way in free agency and get creative with, you know, extending certain guys by restructuring their contract to free up, you know, we got to free up $3 million in cap space so that we can go sign a, you know, a third level guard and, you know, hopefully fill that hole. So, hey, you know, Eric Kendricks, let's restructure your contract, you know? So that's the advantage that they're going to have, I think, you know, with JJ McCarthy over the course of these next handful of years to really kind of build a team around them. And they're going to have the opportunity, and they put him in a position where he can have success early on too. And you can have a really good sense of like how good he is. And you can decide like, okay, we've surrounded this kid with all of this talent. How is he going? How is he progressing? You know, is he good enough to where we can win with him? You know, we're building a good roster around him. Is he good enough? You can be able to really, I think, figure that out over the next 5 years.
So a few interesting things in the comments. Clifford said he needs to make the playoffs more than not, and at least two Super Bowl appearances in order to be a success, which is a bar, I would say, far too high. But what is a reasonable bar? And not Kevin O'Connell says, will JJ McCarthy get more playoffs than Kirk Cousins, more playoff wins? So that just means one. Well, an interesting way, two interesting things there. Number one being, what is the actual bar that they need to achieve with JJ McCarthy to be considered a success? I mean, always, of course, everyone says reach a Super Bowl. That is what you need. I agree. Multiple Super Bowls is a little absurd since Drew Brees was only in one Super Bowl, but is that right? Yeah. So that's, you know, okay. Maybe a little bit on the high side there. Dan Marino only with the one Super Bowl, but will he win an over under of will he win 0.5 playoff games or more as a Viking? Or I guess will he have more? So it'd be 1.5. Is it over 1.5? This is very, I like this. More or less than 1.5 playoff wins for JJ McCarthy as a Viking? What do you think?
I'm going to say more. And I think that kind of speaks more to my optimism with what they've done in this draft by getting him and, you know, moving up to get Dallas Turner as well. Obviously there's a little bit of a shortage in draft picks now because of all the maneuvering that they've done for this draft, but they're going to have a lot of cap space and they're really going to be able to, I think, build this roster the way that they want. And like we keep saying, you know, he's got tools to work with already walking in. He's got so much more to work with than somebody like Drake May. If you were to ask me how many playoff games is Drake May going to win with New England over the next, you know, 6-7 years, I have no idea, because I have no idea if they're going to be able to put a good enough roster together around him, because right now they have nothing and it's probably going to take them a little while. I think, you know, JJ has got a little bit of a head start in terms of what he's got to work with offensively, and an offensive-minded head coach who's really going to take his time and put in a lot of effort to develop him and everything. And I think they're going to be in a pretty good position in the next couple of years to potentially win a couple of playoff games. So I'll say definitely more.
I got to put this on the screen, give this guy credit. The name is Guard Guy and says, I'm always down to sign a guard. So there he is. There's Guard Guy. Guard Guy shows up. We've all become Guard Guy this offseason. I don't know what is going on over there at left guard. Dalton Risner is just going to come back at a cheaper price. Maybe, I guess so. If you were a gambler, just knowing the odds, you would say under, just the odds, because already drafting a quarterback is a 50-50 split anyway. Now, I think that McCarthy, his odds are weighed in the favor of being more successful because of all the things, as you mentioned, that the Vikings can give him. But if you're just asking me about any quarterback, the 10th overall pick quarterback, 1.5 playoff wins, will he win multiple playoff wins during his career with whatever team? You would probably just go no on principle, except for maybe the number one overall pick, because those guys have a different history than everybody else. If someone's a number one overall pick quarterback bust, we talk about it for a century. So that's a little bit different. Like with Caleb Williams, you would probably bet the over with him, but everybody else, I don't know. And with the Drake May thing, it does bring us to another part of the conversation I wanted to ask you about. Now, as far as me, I think he will. I think he will win more than 1.5 playoff games, especially since there is a 7-team playoff now, which is unnecessary, but helps you with your chances to win an extra playoff game. If it isn't more, it's a failure. Oh, yes, I agree. If it isn't more, then it didn't work out. It's just when you consider the odds, then, you know, it's just the reality of this is that most quarterbacks who are drafted probably don't win multiple playoff games overall. But under these circumstances, I think that he probably will. And yes, it would be a total failure. The Drake May thing, by the way, it came out today what the Vikings offered for Drake May, or at least what someone is being told that the Vikings offered for Drake May. They didn't announce it or send out an email that says, we offered this. But the offer, Manny, was the 3 firsts that we all expected it to be, 11, 23, next year's first round pick. And they wanted 3 and some middle round stuff back from the New England Patriots. There was some framing of it that made it sound like they wouldn't do it unless they got the mid round stuff back. I don't know that. I just know that that is the offer. What was your impression of that offer? Should they have gone more? Did they go as far as they possibly could? Was New England not giving it up unless they signed over the deed to US Bank Stadium? Like, what is your opinion on the offer that was reported that the Vikings gave the Patriots?
I thought that was about as far as they should have gone. It really kind of seemed the way everything kind of played out, and the reports that we got from like Adam Schefter saying like there was zero chance the Patriots were going to move that pick. It just really kind of felt like it was going to take like everything to get that pick from the New England Patriots, which means that to me that they really had no intention of ever really moving that pick because they wanted Drake May and they were going to take him and not look back. But as far as like what the Vikings were willing to give up, I think that's honestly, that's about, especially when you're considering that this was a very good like quarterback class, this draft class. You know, unless you are just absolutely in love with Drake May and it's Drake May and nobody else that we want as our next quarterback, I think they went about as far as they could because they had other options, So I think that in itself, what they did offer was a lot to move up 8 spots to take a guy in a quarterback heavy, draft. That was just a lot to give up. And, I think in hindsight now, when you look at what they were able to pull off by getting McCarthy and still, being able to hang on to that 23 pick, move up to get Dallas Turner at 17, I think that was actually the better outcome to me in terms of like what the Vikings want to do long term. So I thought that's a lot to give up. And I'm kind of glad now that they didn't give up all of that because I think they came out pretty good out of that first round.
So Dwayne says, by the offer, the Vikings considered McCarthy closer to May than initially expected. I look at it the opposite way. If they were willing to trade 3 firsts to get one of the guys and let the other one fall to them and only moved up 1 spot when they thought Denver might jump over them, then I think the gap was maybe bigger than people expected. The gap was supposed to be 1 pick and it ended up being 7 picks. It was supposed to be maybe they only trade up 11 and 23. It ended up being they trade up nothing essentially versus giving up 3 firsts. I think that May was the guy that they far and away wanted more than anybody else to be able to put 3 first round picks on the table. And as they said repeatedly, believe that he would be someone that could make up the difference and carry a team. And it very well may ultimately be the right move. I mean, historically, if you're QB3 or QB5, both taken in the top 10, I think your odds are pretty close, even if the scouting reports favored one guy over the other. Just we know that, the order of where they're drafted hasn't really been all that indicative of which guys succeed and which don't. The Josh Allen draft, number 3 and number 5 end up being the best quarterbacks by a country mile over 1 and 2 and 4. So, I mean, who can predict this once they're actually on teams and so forth? The thing about the offer is if you start giving up any more than that, if you start giving up Christian Darrisaw or something, then you are punching massive holes in the thing that's supposed to help your quarterback succeed. Mm-hmm. Now, if he was to become Josh Allen, then of course you can find some other schmo to play left tackle and he'll just run away from the guy and be a legend. But he has to be a legend. And Kwesi brought this up. He said, what are the odds that the guy becomes that? Maybe 1 in 10. That anybody becomes what Josh Allen is. So, I just understand where they would have to draw a line and go, well, what if he's Matthew Stafford? I mean, we saw when a team was not that great with Matthew Stafford, even though he was extremely talented, but when the Lions weren't good around him, he didn't win a lot. He would get to 7, 8, 9 wins and be limited. So the bar for trading up everything to get May is so high that he almost has to become a top 5 quarterback in order for it to actually work. And with McCarthy and not giving up almost anything, now the bar is what level of quarterback is Jalen Hurts? What level of quarterback is, Brock Purdy? They're probably 10-ish, somewhere in that range by their talent, but then moved up and up by the team that is around them. And that's what you're trying to do with JJ McCarthy. It's a very, what's more likely that you can put a team around McCarthy and have him succeed with that, or that the other guy becomes Josh Allen? It's probably much more, we've seen it many more times that, Jared Goff can be pumped up early in his career by the Rams, for example, or, like I said, Hurts or, Brock Purdy. We've seen this a number of times with great teams and those quarterbacks. So I think that they made the right decision not moving that offer any farther. I guess that's the final verdict for me. I also think the Patriots were just not doing it almost no matter what.
Yeah, that's kind of the overall sense I got. I just don't think they had any real serious intention of moving that pick unless you did like a Mike Ditka for Ricky Williams type of thing where you just say, all right, Elliot Wolf, here's our whole draft. You're going to have whatever you want. Then New England pulls the trigger on a deal. But I think they identified Drake May as their guy and they were set on that and they were going to take him and not look back. And I think it's, the thing of it is if you give up more than what the Vikings offered and then you swing and miss on Drake May, if he ends up, you know, all the stuff that we heard from like the Merrill Hodges and the Chris Sims of the world end up becoming like true and Drake May ends up being bad, then you're in big trouble because you've swung and missed on this quarterback and you've given up, you know, so much for him. So you don't really have a lot of draft capital to sort of make up for that and sort of clean up that swing and a miss. You know, the 49ers could afford to give up what they gave up to move up and get Trey Lance because they had built such a really good team. You know, John Lynch has done such a great job and Kyle Shanahan, such a terrific coach that they could endure, you know, swinging and missing on Trey Lance because of the great roster that they had really already kind of built up to that point. You know, the Vikings have a good set of players on the team, but they're not a finished product yet. And if you swing and miss on that quarterback because you gave up, you know, four first round picks or whatever it would have taken to actually get a Drake May deal done, and then he's not good, then you're just in really bad shape for a long time. Because you can't even, like, at that point, you can't even like say, oh, Drake May's bad, so we'll just draft another young quarterback. Well, you don't have any first round picks to do that at that point. So I think ultimately it's worked out good for the Vikings. They still got a guy we talked about for weeks, you know, before the draft, that ultimately, like, the Vikings just have to get out of this draft with a young quarterback. Who the hell cares who it is at this point? Just identify a guy and plug him into your roster and start to develop him and try to rebuild this thing into a contender in a couple of years.
What if he becomes Brock Osweiler is asked in the comments. Well, then we will be talking about a coaching change in a few years, I guess. I mean, that goes for everyone who's just not great. Like, that's why when we talk about these comparisons, we talk about, you know, what the bar is versus Vikings quarterbacks who succeeded. We talk about comps of guys who were good in the NFL, and then it's different layers of good, because we all know if it's bad, there's 100 different quarterbacks who are bad, and then you know what's going to happen there. You're going to lose, and you're not going to make the playoffs, and they're going to look at this quarterback decision as, well, I guess you didn't make the right one, and so you're probably not going to survive that, and they all know it. But, you know, when it comes to McCarthy, one of the questions earlier that I scrolled by was about whether O'Connell looks as excited now as he did pre-draft in his press conferences. And what I would say is that once you've made the decision, I'm sure the terror sets in. Like, now we got to make it work. Now this has to be right. Like, we go through this whole process, we do all those things, and it's all right, we're getting this quarterback, we're getting him. But exact same thing happens when you buy a car. You go to the car lot and you're looking at all the cars and you're like, okay, all right, look at them all. They're so fast and shiny. And then you bring it home and you're looking out at it and going, well, I hope I got the right car, because yeah, I looked at 11 different cars. This happens, you know, when we buy the house, you move into the house. Like, I think we made the right decision. House hunting is so much fun. You go in, you look around, you go, oh, there's a toilet in the basement. That's weird. This is cool. Look at this backyard. That did happen, by the way. We just random toilet in the basement of a place that we visited. Like, what is that doing there? But, oh, these people, they must have done this. This is so exciting. And then you buy the house, you go, all right, time to move in. Let's hope that it's not haunted. And like the same thing is you draft a quarterback. Let's hope he's not haunted, because all the other quarterbacks in Vikings history were.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the Chicago Bears aren't thinking that?
Oh, they're nervous.
They have the number one pick. They got the guy that everybody would have wanted. But Matt Eberflus, especially Matt Eberflus, has to, like, he's thinking, okay, this has got to work. We got to make this work. And if it doesn't look good early on, I'm going to be out of a job. You know what I mean? So that's the league, man. You take a quarterback and it's got to work. Like, I've been saying it, you know, leading up to the draft, people were asking me, my friends, and people were texting me just saying like, oh, well, who do you think the Vikings should take? Which quarterback, if you were the Vikings, which quarterback do you want? I said, well, you know, I like Drake May a lot. And said, but honestly, I don't really care who they take. It just needs to be the right guy. ultimately, it just needs to work. Whoever it is, I don't care. Just whoever they take, it's just got to be the right guy and it's got to work out. And if it doesn't, people are going to get fired. That's just the way the NFL works.
Yeah, and that's why what I did the other night was when they picked McCarthy, we had all sorts of discussions, super fun throughout draft season, picking apart every element of these quarterbacks, but just said, all right, now we got to wash away whatever we thought draft time. And, you know, there's always going to be people who think that he's the next Joe Montana or Troy Aikman. And there's going to be people who think he's the next, you know, who from 2011 and just take what you thought and just wash it away, because we're going to start getting new information about this player and we're going to start learning about what he really is in the NFL. And none of that stuff that he did before actually matters. And none of our opinions about him before actually matter, because now he's the Vikings quarterback and we work with that. Rookie minicamp should be in a week or so, I think, maybe next week. It's usually a week after the draft ends up happening. Another question was about Poles versus Kwesi in the rebuild, competitive rebuild versus the tank. As far as Vikings versus Bears, Manny, I think that both teams are well equipped to be contenders for a long time. There is really no question, though, which team has better odds of that, and that is the Chicago Bears. It's just a fact. Number one overall picks have the highest ceiling of anybody, especially guys that are considered to be talents of the level of Caleb Williams. I'm sure someone will immediately say, he's going to be a bust. Like, okay, well, for your sake, then that would be nice for you if that was what actually happened. But by the odds, I think Chicago has the best chance. Where the Vikings are trying to even the score is they have the all-world receiver of all-world receivers. They also have, I think, a better coach set up to help their quarterback succeed. And that would be where I believe they have the advantages. I don't think they have too many other advantages. Matt Eberflus is a good defensive coach. That may be their disadvantage, is that they have a defensive coach. Williams is a better prospect by quite a bit than J.J. McCarthy. That doesn't mean he'll be better. It just means he's a better prospect. They added now a great receiver proven and drafted a great receiver prospect to go along with Montez Sweat, who they acquired, a bunch of other draft capital they've put into it. They have more going for them than the Vikings. And guess how many wins each team had along the way from 2022 to now in the postseason? They both had zero. So it's hard not to say Chicago did it better than the Vikings. At least that's how I look at it. I don't know how you look at it.
Yeah, I see it the same way. I mean, that they have made, the Bears have made some really, really sneaky good moves. You know, getting Montez Sweat was just, that was just an A-plus move, getting him in the middle of the season like that. And, you know, really taking advantage of a situation that Washington kind of screwed up with him, with contract situations, because they had paid like some other guys and couldn't pay him or didn't want to pay him or whatever. And he's a good young player and he's going to be good for a while. So that was a really sneaky, good, like, pickup for them. And you know, you got two top 10 picks in this year's draft because you made a trade. One of them, because you made a trade with the Carolina Panthers, who were so desperate to trade up and get Bryce Young. And so Caleb Williams kind of fell into their lap, which I think you could equate to a little bit of luck being on their side too, with things kind of working out that way. And, you know, and they're gonna have cap space too. They're gonna have money to work with and some flexibility still with, you know, a rookie scale contract with their starting quarterback. So, they're in a good spot. I think the big question with the Bears is just going to be, like, is Matt Eberflus the right head coach for them, like, going forward, if they're going to ultimately win and contend? Is he the right guy? I don't know if he is or not. He's a defensive coach, and that, you know, for whatever reason, that gets frowned upon in sort of this day and age in the NFL. But who knows? I mean, it might end up working out for them, and we'll see how it plays out. The Vikings do have some things going for them as well. They're going to have some cap space next year to work with. And they've got a rookie quarterback on a rookie scale contract, and they've got an offensive minded head coach. So now it's just kind of like, this is why they play the games now. This is why they go through these off seasons. Everybody's trying to jockey for a position to contend. And It's going to come down to who makes which GMs, you know, which GM makes the right moves, makes the right trade, makes the right free agent signing, makes the right draft pick, and which coach does a better job in developing their young quarterbacks. That's what it's going to come down to.
When we're talking about percentages, which I always kind of look at things through this, odds of things happening through that lens, Chicago has a better chance to make a Super Bowl with what they've done than the Vikings.
Yeah.
And even the Detroit Lions were one quarter away from getting there after they tanked and they turned it around as quickly as they did. Now that all hinges on whether Caleb Williams becomes what people think that Caleb Williams can become within the next 3 years or so, where they are building this team that has an opportunity by 2025 to be a behemoth. I mean, it's just so talented already in the way they've rebuilt it and shows that it's, I don't want to be bad for 10 years. Well, they were bad for a couple, but even last year started to show signs of life. It's just the reality that they've got a better chance based on what they've done and who they have now on their team. But in the NFL, we're talking better chance by how much? I mean, only by percentage points, because the Vikings have the rookie contract advantage. They have superstar talent on their team, and they have very likely better offensive coaching, which could even the score with the Chicago Bears. The route all of a sudden in the NFC became tougher, though. If Jaden Daniels becomes good, then it's tougher. If, you know, the other, you know, quarterbacks that have been drafted recently develop like Bryce Young, then it becomes tougher what the NFC is. If Jordan Love continues to play the way he did in the second half of last season, it becomes a lot tougher to be that team. And it's going to take, in my opinion, a 2025 offseason kind of for the ages for the Vikings to put out a roster that can be on the same level as what we expect Chicago, Detroit, and Green Bay to have, or even better than them. So I look at it as the way Chicago drafted, and it's the world just handed them Rome Odunze as well. Like, nobody wanted to take Rome Odunze. Okay. So you just got to give him to Chicago, give a great weapon to Caleb Williams right away. The track is very difficult now for the Vikings. And that's one of the reasons they had to move on from Kirk and do this, because Kirk was going to win 13 games when two teams were tanking in the division, not when this team is these teams are all stacked up as well as they are. I was curious, Manny, what else stuck out to you from draft night? Like, what else was on your mind coming out of draft night?
I thought Philadelphia did pretty good with getting the two corners. Their first two picks were corners. They needed to kind of sort of retool that defense. That defense just got shredded, especially like the second half of last year. That defense was really, really bad. So I think getting the two young corners, I think will help them. I like what Indianapolis did too, getting the Latu kid from UCLA. That's going to help their.
Oh, it took this long for Manny's head to freeze. A tradition like none other. And he was right in the middle of breaking down corners that went to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Am I back?
Oh, you're back. Yeah, okay. You're back. Okay. we heard the Philadelphia Eagles part, and you compared Cooper DeJean to Jason Sehorn, I think. And that was the last thing that I heard you say. So what was the next thing?
I thought Philly did a good job sort of retooling that defense. I thought Indianapolis did a really good job too with Latu from UCLA, sort of bolstering that defense as well. They got a receiver in the second round to help out Anthony Richardson too, going forward. I think Indy's in a pretty good spot to, you know, if Anthony Richardson can stay healthy and develop, I think they're headed in the right direction too. They've got a really good, head coach there too. So Philly and Indianapolis, I liked what they did in the draft, because I think it's those pieces were good and they're going to help those teams going forward.
I want you to recreate for me your reaction to Michael Penix going number 8. What was that like?
I honestly just laughed. I don't even think I can recreate that laugh. it's like, come on. It's like, the first thing that came to my mind is like, come on, you can't make this up. You cannot make this up. It was, It was a shocking, baffling, amazing, hilarious moment. But, you know, after having a few days to think about it, I don't hate it. I don't think it was that bad. I think, you know, on the surface, it's easy to say, well, you know, you drafted, they should have taken Dallas Turner, take an edge rusher that can help you right now. Well, and I like Dallas Turner, and I'm glad the Vikings were able to get him. But, you know, with these first round picks, you just never know who's going to be able to come in right away and make an immediate impact, because not all first round picks do that. And so who's to say that if they would have taken somebody other than Michael Penix, if that guy was going to step in and make an immediate impact for them. So I think, you know, there's probably a little bit of concern about, you know, how long Kirk Cousins is going to hold up over the course of this contract. And I think you have Michael Penix as sort of an insurance policy with some upside as well, with a chance to be a pretty good quarterback. And so, and they've got young weapons there as well. So if in the event Michael Penix needs to step in 2024 and play, I think there's a decent chance he can step in and have some success if Kirk is not able to go. But if you're asking me for my immediate reaction, I laughed pretty hard. It was pretty funny.
I did too. And I was on the air here and I couldn't stop because I kept thinking about how Cousins gave his speech about money and what it represents and all that. And what he was talking about is like the commitment, that all he wanted was commitment. And then Pelissero had such a good line on TV. He said that it was like cheating on your wife, like on your honeymoon, is what this was like. So if we're making a love comparison, it's just too perfect. The minute he thinks he's landed with a franchise that's truly in love with him, they put on the dirty bird chain. He tampers in the first press conference or whatever. He admits he's tampering, and they're just running him everywhere. They got him at the Braves game. He's at the Masters. They're doing everything you could possibly do in Atlanta. I think Ron Gant was throwing him slow pitch softballs or whatever. Everybody remembers Ron Gant, right? Then they just draft someone else. It's like so funny that the guy had about 27 days of feeling like, yeah, I'm the big quarterback that everybody loves in Atlanta. And then, nah, buddy, we're still looking toward the future. But I like what Cade said here. It took the Falcons 1 month to do something the Vikings couldn't in 6 years. And to your point about not hating it, I advocated for it the whole time he was here. So how could I be against it when they do it? I brought it up every draft season, and sometimes I would have been right. Sometimes I would have been wrong. I suggested Lamar Jackson. I suggested Jalen Hurts. I also may have suggested Mac Jones. Hard to say how that turns out, but probably not the highest end. But they had opportunities to draft quarterbacks while Kirk was here, and they just never did it, and they never did it, and they never did it. And we kept going, there goes one, there goes one, there goes one. And all these, you're going to have a future of the franchise. Are any of these guys going to be your, franchise future quarterback? And Atlanta said, we're going to draft for the future, and we don't care if we look really silly for doing it. And I have to respect the fact that they did that, and also think, I can't believe that they did that, because almost nobody would do this. This is only maybe a Packer thing, and they would do it with the 20th pick and not the 8th. So last thought from the draft as a whole, Manny, we did so much leading up to this, talking about it. What are they going to do? Who are they going to get? How are they, you know, how does it feel now that it's over? Like, do you feel like Kevin O'Connell we talked about, where it's, you know, a little bit, anxious now? Because I was thinking about this, and I wrote about this the other day, purpleinsider.com, go see the articles, sign up for the newsletter. But I was thinking about this the other day about how it's not that hard to tear apart a team. It's really hard to build a team that wins. It's easy to get rid of Adam Thielen. It's hard to find the next Adam Thielen. It's easy to cut Eric Kendricks. It's not easy to replace Eric Kendricks. The hard part begins today. It's the most exciting time that's happened in a long time. It's also the most difficult because you don't have that position locked in. You do have the expectations now that you are supposed to raise this to a level that goes beyond what you achieved with Kirk Cousins. So that's my prevailing feeling is you did it. Mission accomplished for competitive rebuild. Now the true hard part begins.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's, I kind of, you know, making a basketball comparison here, but like, it's like when the Timberwolves made the Rudy Gobert trade 2 years ago, where they gave up all these draft picks to get, you know, a 30-year-old center in a league that typically plays, you know, small ball a little bit more often. My viewpoint was I didn't love that trade when it happened, but my thought was, okay, it's, you know, the Wolves are a big topic around the league now. Everybody's talking about this deal, but now it's, you've made this big blockbuster trade. Now you got to win. Now you got to go out and you got to get it done. You got to get yourself in contention to contend for a championship. And now the Wolves have put themselves in a position to do that this year. And it's the same for the Vikings now. All right, you've got your young quarterback. You thankfully did not have to, you know, give up a ton of.
He'll come back. Just give him a minute. We got two frozen Manny heads this tonight. Usually we only get one. Somebody in the comments earlier said his AOL free month ran out. That's pretty good. I like that. You guys are funny every time. How long do we give it? I was wrapping up the show and now he's frozen, and he's frozen like that too, which is actually hilarious. I mean, he's making a great point. You can tell by his head. I think he'll come back in just a second. We'll just give it to him. But yeah, AOL, and that goes way back where you had a CD or something you could put in and get a free month of AOL online. There are references that we make on this show that clearly demonstrate that I was born in the 90s. Oh, there you go. And now you're back. Now you're back.
I feel like I just time warped back to the 90s too.
You just did,
quality
right?
Quality of internet, yeah.
When you came back, it went beep, 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 beep. Like your mom can't make a phone call now because you're on the internet. That whole stuff. Yeah, we are we're definitely old. So carry on with your final thoughts, Manny.
I think ultimately you got what you wanted to, what you ultimately like set out to achieve. You got your young quarterback. Now it's just time to go to work. You got JJ McCarthy. It's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to be a great quarterback. You've got to develop him into that. You've got him set up in a pretty nice situation where the chances of him having success are pretty high because of the weapons you have around him. But you've got to do it. You know, the flaws in his game, you've got to try to mitigate some of that stuff and continue to just grow him and develop him as a quarterback. And, you know, Dallas Turner too. Like, Dallas Turner's got to get in the lab. He's got to go to work. He's got to become, you know, a great pass rushing defensive force to really kind of justify, like, you know, they gave up a lot to move up and take him at 17 too, when you factor in what they gave up to get 23 and then what they then gave up to go up six more spots. So he's got, you know, there's some pressure on him too to really kind of develop into something special as well. So I'm excited, but you know, it's you may have had a really good draft, but now you've got to make good on all of that now going forward in order for this team to contend, and we're all going to be watching to see how it plays out.
The first test for Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and this regime was to get to this point that we understood that the Wilfs wanted to remain competitive and they had to work within those bounds. And they did. And they got to this place where they got a top 10 quarterback and they have a roster with a healthy salary cap situation after this year and players who will be here over multiple seasons. Jonathan Grenard, Andrew Van Ginkel, Blake Cashman. These are guys who can be here for a while. Foundational pieces. They re-signed Metellus brilliantly before last year. And then he has this big breakout year. They end up saving money that way. So they, now are going to have an expensive receiver and left tackle. That's okay. Those are expensive positions. Addison was a great draft pick. Hockenson can be here for many years as a tight end into his 30s. you're in a good position, a very good position. Now you have to make it happen. So part one gets probably a B plus to get to this point that, you know, there were mistakes along the way. It wasn't perfect, but you accomplished what you were supposed to. Now is where you truly get judged, because you know who cares about a competitive rebuild? Minnesota Vikings fans and the media and no one else. Like, no one else, because everybody else is looking at the 49ers go to the Super Bowl. They're looking at the Eagles go to the Super Bowl. They don't care about you until you're truly winning. They don't pat you on the back and call you the champion of the offseason until you're truly winning. And so that's where you want to be. Locally, everyone who paid close attention saw how this played out, saw that they put themselves in the best position right now. But your goal is to make everyone care. Everyone watching championship weekend care. And until you're there, then it is not an actual true success. And I think they understand that. So, Manny, this was fun. It turned out to be great. Your head froze only twice, which your internet coming back on will give it a little bit of off-season excuses, I think, for some rust for your internet. But no, honestly, super fun conversation. Really glad that we could get together as always. And we've got Lynx games to go to, buddy. It is yes. going to be maybe, you know, potentially the most exciting year in W history. So that should be really fun. I know you and I will be out there, and we'll check in throughout the off season when stuff happens as well. So thanks for your time, man.
I am looking forward to attending a few Lynx games with you this summer. Oh, yeah. I'm pumped. I'm very, very excited. And always a pleasure being with you on this platform as well.
Diamond Miller season, baby. All right. Thanks everybody for watching as always. And lots more to come. I can't even reveal how much more there is to come for this week and going forward. So we'll catch you all later. And thanks everybody for all the fun comps and trolling me with hilarious comps and everything else. Really appreciate it. And Taylor, who's telling me to take a vacation. There is no vacation from football. It is always football here. So we'll catch you guys later. Football.